Why some of us have a hard time throwing anything away. Some people keep their homes free of clutter and knickknacks, while others hold on to items from their past in boxes, on shelves, in the attic. Why do some of us have a need to keep all this stuff? It may be for practical reasons, as in, gee, that coat hanger might come in handy for opening my locked car door. It might be wishful thinking that someday those jeans will fit again. But often it's for sentimental value, and the items belong to a loved one who passed away. I'm Keith Shortall, and today we'll talk to three experts who will help us understand the habits and the psychology behind keeping possessions. And we'll learn about some tips on when and how to let go. And as always, we want to hear from you, keeping pieces of our past and knowing when to let them go. First, this news. From the MPBN studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Maybe it's an old coffee mug from a job you held years ago, or it could be a piece of clothing you haven't worn for years but just can't seem to give away, or it could be a chest of drawers that doesn't really go with the decor, but it nonetheless holds sentimental value to you or a family member. Whatever the item, whatever the reason, there's a good chance you're holding on to something that you or your spouse or a sibling or a son or daughter is bugging you to get rid of, but you just can't seem to do it. Today we're going to talk about why we sometimes have a hard time letting go of things. With me in the studio, Bettina Blanchard. She's been a professional organizer for 12 years. She's the founder and chief organizer of All In Place Organizing Services. She also writes the weekly e-zine Life Simplified. Julie Longwa Peterson is an assistant professor of psychology at the University of New England, and Elizabeth Peavy is a prize-winning writer, teacher, and performer. Her one-woman show, My Mother's Clothes Are Not My Mother, premiered in Portland in September of 2011. And as always, of course, we want to hear from you. Do you find yourself sometimes looking around your home wondering, why can't I get rid of that? Our phone number is 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Email address, talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. First of all, welcome to Maine Calling, to all three of you. And I should say that I should be a guest on this show, not the host. And I have a problem in two ways. One is the sentimental thing. You know, I know I'm not throwing away that sock. That was my dad's. But also this, you know, I'd like to say it's a Yankee thing, but I can't really blame it on that anymore. But it happened to me this morning, and I was taking out the recycling, and I was really having an internal battle with myself over the fact that I really don't need to save another plastic milk jug that might be used at some point to bail out a boat that I don't own. I did manage to throw it out, but it took a lot of effort. And I'm guessing, though, I'm not alone. There are psychological reasons why people have a tendency to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that our desire or obligation in some circumstances to keep things is fairly normal, at least in America, or at least in Westernized societies, that it is indeed fairly normal. And there are quite a few psychological theories that can speak to that as well.
And we'll talk about those a little later, Julie. But I was also wondering, though, since my son appears to have inherited this tendency too, even though, you know, he's only eight, but he's showing signs. And I was wondering if there is, like, somewhere in the process of natural selection, early humans, you know, who, you know, finished their clam dinner and then you know, the Neanderthal looked at the shell and said, you know, boy, I could use that to dig something later. Were rewarded, even though his partner insisted that he throw it back on the shell heap. But I'm wondering if there is just sort of maybe in the human animal is a sort of propensity to gather things that they might have a future need for, even if it's irrational.
Yeah, sure. I think that you know, on the one hand, we as humans are you know, predisposed to find uses for objects in ways that can benefit us in some, you know, way, shape, or form. But I also think that, you know, when we own something, when it's ours, we place more value on it and think it has more utility than that same object if we don't own it. So, for example, those plastic jugs that you have, you know, one day you might use these. But, you know, if you saw that same plastic jug in someone else's garage, you probably wouldn't think to yourself, oh, you know, that might have some value or some utility to me.
Actually, I probably would have. I'd have plastic jug envy.
Plastic jug envy.
because there are these other moments, too, though, which reinforces this. And that's when you're in the middle of a task. And it dawns on you, boy, if I had only saved that plastic milk jug, if I had it right now, I could finish this job. And that just perpetuates this tendency.
Yeah, almost like an intermittent reinforcement schedule or something, right? Now and again, it's rewarding. And so you continue to save things should they be rewarding later.
Or conversely, when you actually go into that trunk and take out that prom dress from 1977 and wear it, and everybody says, ooh. Then that reinforces that behavior. So it's like, I'm not throwing away any of the clothes that I've ever bought.
Right.
It generalizes to your whole wardrobe.
Good segue to you, Elizabeth Peavy, because this is sort of, well, the prom dress as part of the show that came out a couple years ago in 2011, as we mentioned at the top, which is My Mother's Clothes Are Not My Mother. Just tell us about the show and sort of from whence it came.
It started as a process, really, of trying to clean out my mother's closet after she died. And the line, my mother's clothes are not my mother, actually bubbled up out of me when I was struggling to get rid of, you know, the 30 pairs of footies that were, you know, at my feet. No, her feet were in these footies. I can't throw these away. And I literally had to say, these objects are not my mother. These objects are not my childhood. The show begot as I started writing a memoir about this, and more as I was writing these sections, because I always write in the first person, they became monologues. And I said, I have to say these words out loud. I was up in Bethel for 2 weeks in May. I came back. I contacted the St. Lawrence Art Center, said, can I have a night in September? And then they said yes. And all of a sudden, I had to create a show. What's been interesting, I was going to do one night, but I have struck a chord, and I think both of my guests, panelists will agree with this, is that we're all sort of pathological about this. And people line up at the end of the show to tell me about their object, their pincushion or their shoe or their photograph that they can't get rid of. And I think we're all in the same boat together.
We have a clip from the show so people could get a taste of what the show is about, if we could play that.
You see, my mom's condo just sold, and my brothers and I need to clear out its contents. Pronto. But first, I've asked them to let me come in here by myself to do something with her clothes. As mom's only daughter, it feels like my duty, something she and I need to do alone, together. But as you may have gathered, I'm not doing a very good job. Let's see, I've been here all morning, and what have I accomplished? I played with her jewelry. I looked at some old photographs. I painted my toenails with her nail polish. But I don't know. It seems every time I approach her clothes, it's as though I can feel her presence behind me, her voice whispering in my ear. Oh, no, not that. Not to strangers. Which is why I have to keep reminding myself my mother's clothes are not my mother. My mother's things are not my childhood. And yet I know someday her diamond ring and bone china will mean more to me. But right now, at this moment, if any one of you so much as laid a finger on this footy that was on her foot, I'd probably have to kill you.
You could have, and maybe you have in the course of this, just sort of forgiven yourself and said, well, of course it's hard for me to get rid of this stuff. This was one of the most important people in my life. And of course I'm keeping her footies. And there'd be nothing wrong with that. Most people would understand. But did you wrestle with it?
Oh, I did. Well, first of all, I live in a bungalow, so closet space is at a minimum. But it was also letting go of things. And I think, again, that that takes another level, again, of taking the magic away from it. As humans, I think we imbue objects with magic. I mean, that's why we look at things like the flag or a Bible or a totem, because we put magic on them. And once you can sever that magic, then it just becomes an object and you can let go of it. So my mother had a funny sense of humor, and I think that she actually gave me the show so that I would have to hold on to all of her clothes for the rest of my life because they're props in the show now. So she's laughing.
Yeah. Do you still have the footies?
I have the footies. I have the footies. I have her prom dress. I have my prom dress. I'm hopeless. I'm banked by these two professionals, so they're probably going to take me out in a jacket when we're done.
So 3 years of doing the show, and you haven't really made any progress.
I threw away some moisturizer of hers that was starting to congeal the other day. Yeah. So I'm a little bit.
Baby steps.
Little
bit. Bettina Blanchard, do you help people like Elizabeth Peavy in this sort of process of trying to throw things away, or are you more... here's the stuff. Help me put it in order.
Both. I help people understand their relationship with things, because there are loving something is a way of using it. No question. I think professional organizers have a little bit of a bad name when it comes to, oh, you're going to make me get rid of everything. And I get kind of a kick out of that now. But in the beginning, I was a little horrified, but no, really, because if you love something. But Keith, when you were talking earlier, I wrote a little note down and I wrote, pick a number. So milk jugs, Keith, yes, they are useful, aren't they? We use ours to bail out our hot tub, you know, and every now and then you need another one or you can't find that one. Pick a number is a strategy that can help put some parameters. Your mother's footies, you know, again, how many? Because the thing that we need to remember, that I need to remember, and I start with myself, is that every single thing that I have said yes to, okay, so if it's in my world, whether I brought it in or not, I've said yes to it. Yes, it can stay. Every single thing I've said yes to owns a tiny piece of me. So if I don't want to be a lunatic, it would behoove me to keep some balance between the white space and the stuff. And that is a continual, boy, juggling act.
I do want to talk about organizing because I want a free consultant and I'm going to use this show to do it, which I often do. But how much of it is the act of throwing away one of those footies would be a really emotional thing, as silly as that might sound to some people, because there are some people who I experienced this when some of my relatives have died, who say, get rid of it all. I don't want to see in it. It's just stuff. Get rid of it, which is amazing to me because that's not how I'm wired. To me, the actual act of lifting the trash can lid and throwing it in would be a really emotional thing, and I would beat myself up for that. Is that what's going on, the unwillingness or fear of the act of throwing it away, or is it really keeping it close?
You know, I think in some ways it's a little bit of both. So, you know, most of the objects that we keep are in some way linked to either an important life experience or an important person in our lives. And those two things, right, people like romantic relationship partners, friends, family members, and life-defining experiences are incorporated into who we are, our ideas of ourselves, how we define ourselves. And the actual act of getting rid of objects associated with those people results in what some psychologists have talked about as either a shrinkage in personality or an adjustment in your self-concept. And those shrinkages or adjustments, as most people can identify with, are a little bit painful. And I would imagine that the actual act of throwing something away is very symbolic of the pain that you feel in losing those objects, whether they've been misplaced or you've decided to get rid of them willfully.
So, and I have a couch that was my mother's, and now, and this couch isn't particularly valuable. Mm. You can't really sit on it because it will fall apart. But it was sort of at the center of her. So, and my wife and I are having this thing like, well, if you get rid of the couch, you can you know, move your drums in there. Mm-hmm. So there's a carrot and stick thing going on. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to bore our audience with my personal life, but this couch is a really symbolic thing. And I guess I'm just surprised by how difficult it is to get rid of this couch.
Right. This couch is linked to a person that is part of who you are. And that link can be strong enough that you don't want to break it. And I think whether we're consciously aware of it or unconsciously aware of it, those links are really motivating our behavior. And now, you know, you and your wife are going to have to battle this one out, I think.
We're going to the mattresses on this.
Yeah.
Literally. But Elizabeth, you said you struck a chord. The show took off. You found that this was a charged
subject.
This is
such a universal topic. And I get emails from people, phone calls, notes with the subject heading, my mother's keys are not my mother. My mother's plates are not my mother. My mother's house is not my mother. My mother's player piano is not my mother. You know, that they're kind of trying to use this idea that, again, breaking that emotional tie to an object will help them divest themselves of it. I also think, as someone who rues, you know, throwing away a lunchbox that I had, you know, in third grade, I think that not making that decision is trying to forestall regret, too, because you don't regret keeping something. You get annoyed keeping something, but you don't have that regret. But when something's gone, it's gone. And that regret can never – I mean, I'm the type of person that would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go down to the recycling bin and take out a year of New Yorkers. And, well, I'll decide about those later. And that's one of the things that I say in the show over and over. I'll think about that later. I'll think about that later to forestall regret.
As if keeping them somehow keeps that childhood experience alive. It makes it more tangible for you.
The banana splits live.
Yes.
All right. With that, my mother's couch is not my mother. But we're going to take a quick break. The number to join the program is 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. We'll take a quick break and be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do TIAA CREF Financial Services, TIAA CREF Individual and Institutional Services, and Teachers Personal Investors Services. More at TIAA.org. Casella, converting landfill gas to electricity, committed to providing clean, renewable energy for Mainers. Casella, giving resources new life. And the law offices of Joe Bornstein, a statewide practice representing injured and disabled Mainers since 1974, JoeBornstein.com.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Tim Arango, the Baghdad bureau chief for the New York Times. We'll talk about the rise of ISIS and the story he recently reported of an Iraqi soldier who's believed to be the only survivor of a massacre by ISIS of hundreds of Shiite soldiers. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7.
Tonight, it's special coverage from NPR News. President Obama will address the nation and outline his latest strategy for dealing with the militant group ISIS. I'm Jack Spear. Join NPR for live coverage of the president's speech, along with in-depth expert analysis. That's an NPR News special, President Obama's address to the nation.
You can join us for that this evening at 9 o'clock. You can listen on MPBN Radio, or you can watch it on MPBN Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, why we keep some things and toss others. With me in the studio, Julie Langeway-Peterson. Sorry for the mispronunciation at the top there. She's an assistant professor of psychology at the University of New England. Elizabeth Peavy is a prize-winning writer, teacher, and performer. And Bettina Blanchard is the founder and chief organizer of All in Place Organizing Services. Her website, by the way, for those of you in need of this, www.allinplaceservices.com. And we invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Trendy Stanchfield. She's Senior Director of Mission Investment at Goodwill Industries of Northern New England. Trendy, thank you for joining us here for this conversation today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Keith.
I should also, while I'm doing my confessions, I must say Our family is a goodwill family to the point that my two-year-old screams, yay, every time she sees the goodwill sign on the road. So in the same way, and this is probably an extension of this, Trendy, in the same way I have a hard time throwing stuff away, I love adding to adding treasures to the collection. And Goodwill is just a beautiful place for this. is that what drives the popularity of Goodwill, is going to find something that you wouldn't necessarily shop for directly, but you just happen to see it and it's a good price, and so you really need it?
That's exactly it. It's what could you find that you wouldn't necessarily even think you needed, in quotes. But those special Goodwill finds, and we hear everybody has a story when we talk to them of some great sweater or a table or a purse or something that, you know, they couldn't believe somebody had gotten rid of, and yet it found a really great home and a second life in their closet.
One of we also have sort of fun making up backstories about, you know, how items ended up there. Some really old, incredible items that just end up there, and we don't know the backstory. But I imagine, do you have a sense of any of those stories, or do they just sort of come in and you guess along with the rest of us?
Yeah, you know, I would say it's 50-50. I've been listening to the show, and it's amazing the number of people who are cleaning out after a loved one has passed, or you know, for various reasons, there's an emotional story to why they are bringing their items to us. And they will tell us that story. And our staff at the donation sites are so tuned in to treat every item that we receive with respect for that exact reason, because we don't know the history of everything that comes across our desks. And we've seen, you know, everything from hand grenades to false teeth. And everything in between, but it's those special stories that somebody takes a little extra time to tell you of why they're bringing you the item. And so we like to, you know, pay it back and let them know that those items will find a good home. And it's not them throwing it in the trash or them getting rid of it. It's them finding a new home.
Are the hand grenades or teeth still available? And if so, at which store may I find them on the way home?
No, both have been disposed of properly.
I know your slogan is nothing should go to waste, not a shirt, not a shoe, not a person. What's the mission of Goodwill in that context?
Yeah, you know, we are very much about the triple bottom line, the people, place, and planet. And we really are tuned in to making sure that things are staying out of the landfill. And so whether you are donating items to just get them out of your house, we want to make sure you don't just throw them in the trash. But we also put all of those dollars that we raise to work in your own communities, putting people to work, finding jobs, for some people first jobs, for some people better jobs, and really trying to create a more sustainable community in which we all live and work.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you joining us today. That's an interesting business model, and I cannot stress how important it is to me in my life.
thank you.
All right, Trendy Stanchfield, the Senior Director of Mission Investment at Goodwill Industries in Northern New England. Bettina, I'm wondering how many if you've done your job. Is there a trip to the Goodwill often at the end of the day, or not necessarily?
There's always a trip to Goodwill, always, whether I've done my job or not. It could be my stuff that's, you know, en route to Goodwill, yeah, via a client sometimes. But
so when you go to who's calling you? Is it someone with a garage that's exploded and they don't know how to do it, or is it an organizer with a capital O?
There's lots of different ways and needs for organizing. I get calls a lot of times. My sort of clientele tends to be people who are getting their homes ready to put on the market. And the reason for that is that...
There's a name for that? Stage? No.
Staging is one of the things you can do.
Yeah.
People call and say, I'm having an open house on Sunday and this is Tuesday. And my three teenagers, I can't, the house looks kind of okay or the house doesn't look okay. Help me, help me. Those are, I say that's my clientele because those people have a deadline. And if you have a deadline, I am your girl. If you don't have a deadline, I might not be the best person for you because I don't, I'm not, I can sort of keep chipping away at things, but I prefer to, like, let's get it done. My brother used to call me the white tornado.
Well, I was going to say, so tell us a little bit about the young Bettina and how you're suited for this line of work.
Well, it's my brother. I can either credit him or blame him, depending on the day. And he's just a year and a half older than me. And for my entire life, it's been, sis, can you help me clean my room? Well, clean my room meant find his room. Put all the encyclopedias. Like, seriously, people read encyclopedias. They would be in my brother's room, under the bed, or on the... Anyway, it was... That's how I got started. And... So I've been really doing this a very long time. I've gotten better at it, though.
But, so you can organize, but do you have difficulty throwing away your, you know, corsage from the prom? And
I am a human being. And so, yes, I do have my attachments to things. I, on a scale, probably tend to be less attached than most people. But it's because I like to keep things fairly simple so that there's more time for my people and for me being one of my people, for play. Because if we keep all the toys, then all you're doing is managing toys. You're not playing with them.
Or walking around them.
Or stepping on them and crushing them.
<That's>, or spending time choosing which toy
exactly.
It is that you would like
yeah.
to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
I threaten to crush when I enter my son's room. But, of course, the Legos get the better of my tender feet.
Exactly.
The number to join, 800-399-3566. Let's take another listen to a clip from Elizabeth Peavy's a one-woman show, My Mother's Clothes Are Not My Mother.
I think the other reason my brothers and I avoided dealing with this condo is we had this feeling like, didn't we just do this? It had only been 6 years earlier when we downsized out of our family home of 52 years. And at the time, I have to confess, we were absolutely ruthless. A resounding cry of, chuck it, rang through those childhood rooms. And when we thought Mom was out of earshot, we'd snigger at the teacups and the silk flowers and the milk glass. You're going to get this, one of us would say, holding up a silver teapot or a Polynesian tiki hors d'oeuvres platter. Not if I can sneak it in your car first. This was the stuff that we had grown up with and away from. It was Mom's taste, not ours. Besides, we didn't need her things. We still had her.
My mother's clothes are not my mother. Let's go to the phones now to Fred in Tenants Harbor. Hi, Fred. Fred, are you there? It looks like Fred is not there. Fred, are you there?
Hello. Let me turn the radio down.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. Hi. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. My observation is that we live in stressful times, and so it's natural to hang on to resources, however you define that.
What sort of things?
I hoard books and paper. I've got too much and don't throw it away.
So now, when you say hoard, do you mean that in the true sense, or you're using
no,
it?
No. It's laying around the house, and it's there's some open space on the kitchen table and in the living room, but there's also a lot of clutter.
Now, this is I've seen this. I have family members who do this. It's the paper pile on top of the table. It doesn't necessarily translate into the rest of the house, but it's paperish. And I'm wondering, is that a subgenre of unwillingness to free ourselves? Do you see it, Bettina, in your...
It's postponed decision making, I think. I don't know what to do with this, so I'm going to just put it down. And the thing about paper, you can put a lot of paper in a small area.
Yeah, so there are bills and letters that you're supposed to.
And what am I, the thing from the insurance company, what I'm not really sure what the next step is.
Well, imagine being a writer, because basically all you do all day when you're not writing is moving your papers. So you have, you know, this pile over here, and oh no, this pile is the priority now. So this one goes over here, and I'm even you know, doing almost everything online, everything, you know, in a computer. There's still paper. I mean, I don't print anything out. I don't know where the paper comes from. I think it regenerates itself under my desk.
And let's go to Cape Elizabeth and Margaret. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. I'm responding to your couch.
Mm-hmm. Do you want it?
Maybe. No, my sister has always been very calculated, strategic, and she managed to get all of my grandmother's paintings. And yet, my grandmother had taught me how to paint. And initially, I was very jealous of all those paintings and wanted to find a way to get some of them. And then I really focused on the gifts that my grandmother gave me and how they are still alive with me. And I honestly think that I remember my grandmother more and more deeply having not had those gifts. And if I had had to have them taken away from me, if I had had them, I think it would be the same thing. So I just wanted to respond to your couch, because I think that the act of giving something away isn't just that it isn't your mother, but the act of giving away, if it's ritualized and becomes a rite of passage, I think can actually deepen your connection with that person and how that person still lives in your life.
Yeah, Margaret, thank you for sharing that story. So I've also come to the conclusion that if my mother were alive today, she would say, for goodness sakes, get rid of the couch. You know, it's not, it's, she doesn't care about, wouldn't have cared that much about the couch. So it's clearly, it's my issue. But Margaret, you are welcome to it. Let's go to Thomaston, because I live in Thomaston, and I think Alan might want the couch. Alan?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Alan.
Alan?
Yes.
My question is, probably more directed towards Julie. I work in the field of mental health, and we frequently encounter clients who have like chronic hoarding problems. And I just wanted some insight into how this type of chronic hoarding may differ from some of the everyday person who has some trouble organizing their life and getting rid of objects.
Julie, we hear this, and there's been a popular cable television series on the subject, but is hoarding really just pack ratting on steroids, or is it something different altogether?
You know, I think the answer to this question is probably much more complex than this show lends itself to at the moment, but you know, I would make the argument that hoarders have taken what is a normal maybe mental process and the associated behavior, and it has extended into something abnormal. So, you know, for most people, we have, you know, the material self, or a self-concept that includes material objects, and losing or breaking or having to give away those objects is sometimes painful and can create some anxiety. My guess is, and I'm sort of speculating here, is that for hoarders, there's a lot of anxiety around parting with objects because of the way it makes the self feel. And as they keep sort of accumulating more and more objects start to get linked to the self. And then there's more and more anxiety about the ways in which those objects might be parted from the self. And I think there's probably a feeling of overwhelming, you know, an inability to tackle such a problem alone. I would imagine it also stems from relationships and other underlying issues as well.
Yeah. Alan? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. One thing that occurred to me when you're trying to get rid of the couch, you wouldn't mind if somebody came and took that couch and had that couch, but you don't want to get rid of it yourself. And I think that that's one of the steps, you know, not the hoarding situation, but, you know, I gave away that Polynesian hors d'oeuvre platter to my friend Tanya, and I know that she's going to use it ironically, and it's going to live on in splendor. I didn't want it. I was never going to use it. But now that it's someplace else, it was so easy to get rid of it. So easy to give somebody that couch, so easy to give that blue leather chair away or my mother's earrings, as long as it was going someplace and not just vaporizing into the ether.
Yeah, I want to give Alan a last thought here before we take a quick break.
Well, I think that that's a very interesting idea. I appreciate the comments from Julie. And in addition, that last notion, because I know in our town of Tennant's Harbor, we have recycling and also a place where you can just drop off things that other people might be able to buy, and it benefits the town. And I think that actually makes it a lot easier for people to get rid of some objects. Just like in a yard sale, you know it's going somewhere as opposed to just being given up.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Alan, thank you so much for joining us. We will take a quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. We'll go to Dee Dee in Camden when we come back. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Northeast Delta Dental, administering dental benefits for businesses of all size in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Details online at nedelta.com. Silly's in Portland's East End, open at 11 Tuesday through Friday and at 9 for brunch on the weekends with vegan and gluten-free options, sillys.com. And Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship.
Somehow I've made it into my mid-30s never owning a car. I'm Ari Shapiro, international correspondent for NPR. Although having a bicycle does sort of align with my Portland, Oregon public radio upbringing, when my bike goes to that great bicycle graveyard in the sky, it's probably going to end up on the trash heap. But if it had been a car, I could have turned it into the programs I love. Here's how.
For more information, visit mpbn.net and just click on the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program button in the top left corner. Join us after Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for American Radio Works. They look at the new face of college.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, why we find it difficult to throw some things away. Julie Langevin-Peterson is an assistant professor of psychology at the University of New England. Bettina Blanchard is a professional organizer and writes the weekly e-zine Life Simplified, which you can sign up for at her website, allinplaceservices.com. Put on the glasses, Keith. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call. The number, 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Also with us, Elizabeth Peavy, the creative force behind the one-woman show, My Mother's Clothes Are Not My Mother. Here's an excerpt from that show.
I get it now. I understand why my mom pushed so hard when she was taking apart our family home, insisting on doing so much of the work herself. She knew what she was doing. She was closing down shop, and she just wanted to say goodbye to all that stuff before she sent it out into the world. And not the heirlooms, not the Steinway, not the china, not the jewelry, things that were always destined for another life. But the things, the ordinary stuff of everyday life, the tchotchkes, the doodads, the knickknacks, the clothes, the ordinary things that tether us to this world and say, I was here. Things in their very names that invoke a command, souvenir, French for remember, memento, Latin for remember, remember. Remember me. So how do I now take apart a life that took so long to assemble? I guess the same way my mom did. One piece at a time, one thing at a time. The only way to start is to start.
Elizabeth Peavy, one of our guests today, and her show, My Mother's Clothes Are Not My Mother. An email from Roger who writes, I have moved in with my parents to take care of their needs as they age. Dad is gone. Mom is in the late stages of Alzheimer's. As I try to sort through their belongings, I get the feeling that I am erasing their existence. Any thoughts or suggestions to help resolve these feelings? I'll put it out to the group. This is the key question. Is it just to start?
I I do believe so. I mean, again, you know, we bestow the magic on the objects. We put them there. I mean, I look around my house and I see my friend Leslie in the pot that she gave me. I see my brother in the table that he made me. I see people in the objects that are surrounding me. But they are just objects. And once you, again, pull that plug, when it's the milk jug in somebody else's garage or you see it in a junk shop or something like that, the magic is gone. And so you have to say, okay, I'm going to take this object and say that it doesn't have that magic anymore, or take a picture of it or give it to somebody else that can use it. But, you know, you could bestow that meaning on crackers. I mean, I kept a box of crackers that were already two years expired because my mother hadn't lived in her condo for a while. I just put them in my cupboard because they had to be in the cupboard because they were in Mom's cupboard. And then you just let them go.
As promised, we go to Camden now. I think we have Dee Dee here. Hi, Dee Dee.
Hi. Hi, Bettina. I remember you from way back. This is really a great program. Besides being the eldest of the eldest of several families and having the responsibility of trying to explain everything to everybody and give them away as much as I can, I have a real problem with the culture itself. And I think I partly don't throw things away in rebellion because we're supposed to throw things away, even with goodwill, so we can buy more. So not only do I rebel by not buying more, I rebel by keeping stuff until I can, as this program's been explaining, find good homes for things, either the information, the books, the... clothing isn't so hard, really. You know, there's Goodwill, and there's other places you can take. But the things that people don't know about that they perhaps might want to know about, and then craft materials, are probably my biggest thing. So it's really the culture, though. We just shouldn't be living in a place where we have to buy more and we have to throw stuff out to make space for it.
Yeah, thank you, Dee Dee. And there, as I said at the top, there is this Yankee thing, you know, where you keep, you know, the scraps of string because they're actually needed for various things around the house. And there's nothing wrong with that, right, Bettina?
Right. And there's the just the they don't make
number,
it like
right?
this anymore because yeah. they don't. That right. is really true. They don't make. You're right. When somebody says to me, they don't make it like this anymore, I look them right in the eye and I say, you're exactly right. The question, we are talking about the inanimate. Mm. So when someone calls me in and they're in the midst of a sort of a crisis of stuff, I ask, you know, look at your life overall and where the life is, where the people are and the experiences are. If that's suffering because of the weight, the balance is off, then that, you know, then I'm searching for reasons to let go of things. Does that make sense?
Sure. But when you have a client who is not on a deadline, and you say to them, chuck it, and they say no, what do you do then?
I don't say chuck it.
You don't?
No. I maybe I did back in the beginning, but I don't now. Because I don't know. I'm not walking in their shoes. Sometimes I will say, given the magnitude of the job, I might say, if we, you know, if you can't make a decision on this now, we're going to postpone that decision.
Maybe you're walking in their mother's shoes. let's go to Richard. Hi, Richard. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much. I think one of the big problems is the guilt feelings one has for acquiring the material in the first place. At the moment, I have a piece of scrap wiring that was used as a resistance heater to melt the snow off of roofs. I have an old boiler drain from a high-limit control that came off of a defunct boiler. And I think I'm going to root geraniums, so I need a pad so that I can put the geraniums on that will be temperature-controlled. So I took my resistance heater and I cast it into a concrete pad. I hooked it up with the old oil burner control thermostat. So now I can presumably put my little potted geraniums on this concrete slab and the temperature will be controlled and so on. Well, that project is underway. It probably won't work. But in any event, I've made some use out of something that was on its way to the scrap heap. Now, my device, eventually I'm going to lose interest in potting geraniums. So that whole apparatus, even if it works, is going to be pushed to the back of some table somewhere in the hopes that some other enterprise will emerge in which such enterprise and which such work will be useful.
Sure. So there's this other thing about saving stuff for ingenuity. Oh. This is how I like to envision myself and my problem, even though it's I am not creating anything of the style that Richard is. I do have a couch sculpture that I think is going to be pretty interesting. Richard, thank you for joining us here today. Let's go to Gordon in Damariscotta. Hi, Gordon.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I was calling in part because this topic touches on a significant part of work that I do. And I was wanting to relate a couple of things. One, that the guilt and sadness that comes with dealing with items belonging to someone who's passed on is not common to just the people, the related people. It's actually one of the hardest parts of my business in emptying out houses where people have passed on, is looking at the items that have been once valued and trying to find a place for them. The proactive thought I wanted to toss out for listeners is that if they have a family member who is going to be passing on shortly, that they really want to be exploring options within that community as to where items can be donated, particularly if, you know, the rest of the family is out of state. I heard the fellow in Tenants Harbor say they had a great system up there. I know down here in Damariscotta, we have quite a number of resources where donated items can really be put to good use and treasured by people who normally can't afford them. And that's something that relatives really ought to be, would behoove them to think about.
Yeah, Gordon, thanks very much. So there is some comfort, maybe, and as we've been hearing, finding a home. Yeah. We're sort of giving life to objects, but it is in a way, it's sort of like you find comfort in knowing that this item, as much as you identify it with the lost loved one, is being cherished by someone.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we're hearing almost two themes here. On the one hand, we're hearing really about what do we do with objects that were once owned by someone that we loved who is now deceased? And the first thing that pops into my mind is a social psychology word, mortality salience. When we are sort of made aware of our own mortality, our own certain death, we will hold on more tightly to ideologies, actually, but also things that we think will sort of live on forever. It gives us this sense that while we may physically go, that there are pieces of us that will live on. And I think that that's probably why people are experiencing so much guilt getting rid of items that they think are attached to people.
Is there anything you can do? We're almost out of time here, but with your kids and say, hey, kids, when I'm gone, please don't fret over, you know, my footies.
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea that we hold on to ideologies might be a way to go. Right. So what are our family beliefs, our family value systems? And so when I go, you know, don't save my teacups, save, you know, the way that we loved each other and what I taught you about being a person, you know, the way that our family functions in society. I think that that's probably a good way to not tie those memories to things and tie them more to your family.
I heard a great expression from a friend of mine whose mother said that she was going to be dying tidy.
Oh, I love that.
Dying tidy. It was already, you know, and some people are just great at it. It's, you know, I'm just going to clear the shelves.
I'm writing that one down. There's an e-zine right there.
Die tidy.
Dying tidy.
Bettina, Julie, Elizabeth, thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bettina Blanchard is founder and chief organizer of All in Place Organizing Services. Julie Langeway-Peterson is an assistant professor of psychology at the University of New England. Elizabeth Peavy is a prize-winning writer, teacher, and performer, one-woman show My Mother's Clothes Are Not My Mother premiered in Portland in September 2011. And there's a show this weekend. Where is it? St. Lawrence.
Saturday night and Sunday matinee.
All right, great. Thanks. John Keimel ran the board today. Our volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. We had additional help from the MPBN web team, and you can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcasts on iTunes. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on Maine Calling, join host Jennifer Rooks for a conversation about security and surveillance in our post-9/11 world. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.